Good morning. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Carolyn Murray in for Leslie Thatcher. It looks like Amber Conley is on the line, and she'll be talking about the upcoming agenda for Tuesday's board meeting. Good morning, Amber.
Good morning.
Hi there. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for joining us. So it looks like the agenda includes a discussion on the draft master plan and the superintendent's search to replace you, facilities, capital update on the budget, and a handful of policies that are up for discussion and adoption. Can we first, let's talk about replacing you after your announcement last week that you'll be leaving the Park City School District as a superintendent beginning in June of 2018. It looks like Terry Shoemaker is on, and she's going to present information to the board about the process of a superintendent search. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Right. So Terry Shoemaker, former superintendent of Wasatch, is now the executive director for the Utah Superintendent School Superintendents Association. And Utah typically for a replacement of a superintendent, they have a robust national search process that they use. And so they're going to walk through the board of what they could offer and also what the process looks like overall as far as looking at both in-state and out-of-state candidates.
Okay. And that will begin pretty much immediately, I'm guessing, just because it doesn't this sort of need to start happening as soon
right.
as
I've
we get
through the holiday.
I've been
very open with the board as far as, you know, I have a full dedication to the district, and that rather than having to get an interim, that I'm willing to stay and until they have someone that they're able to work with.
Okay, so let's talk about the budget. There's a report in there that I guess Todd Hauber will be presenting on the 2018 capital projects. It looks like they're mostly complete, and we're a little bit over budget. It looked to me like we were about $100,000 over budget in that.
Right. There's some of the projects that did go a little bit over budget, but we've been able to save in other areas. So the nice thing is that most of them have been completed, as well as us adding the front office vestibules in the elementary schools for the safety improvements out of this year's budget. So that's a very positive. And as we move forward, we've started the budget process for the maintenance and operation. We've moved it up about 2 months. And so it's definitely it caused a little bit more of a work crunch for us here at district office, but it's all in an effort to be able to recruit earlier this year rather than wait until April or May. We want to be able to have our budget solidified and be able to recruit in early February, March.
Sure. Okay. So the safety efforts that have been put in place, the vestibules that are going into the elementary schools, are those up and running? Are those basically up and operational right now?
Nope, they are not up and running. We do anticipate at the end of the holiday break, so January 2nd, when our students come back in our elementary schools, that those will be complete. We're doing some final touches there. We will then begin the process to start the secondary schools. With the idea to have those completed by the start of the next school year. It's just a long process. The board did request for district to go out with a safety consultant to ensure that everything that we've proposed is within national guidelines. And so we have sent that request for product out last week, and we'll be selecting one January 2nd. So we've put our committee together.
So it will potentially be a different contractor than that provides the secondary school updates?
Well, what we have to do for the secondary schools is that could be a possibility. We do have to go through a different architectural process and contracting process than what we were able to do with the elementary.
Okay. Is that just because of the structures themselves, or why would it be different?
Right. So a couple of different things. One, it's based on procurement laws that we have to follow and also some changes that we've had in the last 6 months. And then, of course, they are a little bit more complex, especially the high school, given the number of entrances that we have to the high school. So we're needing to take some more time there.
Yeah, sure. There are a lot of doors that run along that building. So those will all have to be retrofitted, I guess.
They will, and, you know, it'll also take some behavior changes both on our students and our staff and then our parents. And so one of the things that we love about Park City is the openness and the collaborative type spaces that we have in the high school. It's an award-winning architectural design. But in the world of having to increase safety measures, we're going to have to do some different things with the doors.
Okay. So from my understanding, there is going to have to be a tax increase this year. I didn't see that discussion on the agenda, but with the teacher compensation package that was approved last year, it's been, you know, pretty much an open discussion that there will have to be a tax increase for the 2018-19 school year.
That is correct.
Yes.
So Todd has put together some numbers, and I do believe that they're posted on our website, and I'm sure we'll talk about them again tomorrow night. They were in last week's meeting, and what that looks like is a very small tax increase that our residents will see in order to provide the necessary staffing that we have to be able to provide the world-class education that we're providing.
Okay, let's talk about the draft master plan that is on the agenda for tomorrow. It looks to me, just reading through it, it's a pretty comprehensive overview of the things that need to happen for the board to be able to adopt a master plan. And
that's correct.
Yeah, so let's start by talking about the recent announcement of your departure in June and what the change in leadership means and what it will mean for the whole master planning process. You've got a lot of process and details and experience that are crammed into your head. How is that going to get transferred into the new person coming in to fill in your shoes? And on top of that, we've got Kathleen Einhorn, who also announced her departure, and Bob O'Connor, of course, who is not going to be returning to the high school as the administrative head of that. And then recently, Tim O'Connell had mentioned in one of the past board meetings that the board needs to start looking for his successor. So so how is this going to all transfer?
Well, we definitely have transition, and we're also in the middle of looking for a special education director as well. One, I think that we've done a really good job in the last 4.5 years of having documents in place. You know, we refer back to the district learning plan. But before my arrival, we had the strategic plan without an operational plan. And so as you look at the district learning plan, it's 85 pages of what we're doing and what we need to do to keep moving forward for academically to ensure that our students are learning at the highest level that they can learn. And, of course, part of that is to ensure that they have an environment in which they can learn at high levels. And so the really nice thing that as we work with this master planner and going through the process, we have a lot of information that we didn't have when we first started master planning, you know, when I first arrived 4 years ago, because there had been a master plan. We were moving through it. But when we really saw that how much we were growing and our capacity and our buildings, we started getting much more in depth. And so business manager Todd Hauber's been working with a demographer so we can better project that. So we went out for RFP for it that earlier this fall. So first of all, we're trying to make sure that there's documents in place, that we have some understanding, of course, with our facilities manager, Todd Hansen, who's been with our district many years. And then Todd's going to probably have to carry the torch moving forward because there is definitely change.
Yeah, and this demographer that we're bringing in, this enrollment forecasting, seems to me that it would be a really critical part of defining what kind of facilities are going to be needed.
And right now our projections for enrollment actually look for the next year to be stagnant, if not declining, which, you know, in the sense that how fast we have grown, that's actually kind of a good thing. Especially also with the take that the board wants to remove the portables or the modulars or the learning chalets, whatever you would like to
the cottages.
Call them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think the Park City is going to have to, you know, really become involved, be able to come to consensus and get behind education because we do have facility needs.
Okay. We've run out of time, but there is a lot more that's going to be reviewed in this master planning discussion, I would guess. And let's just call it there tomorrow at 4 p.m. at the district offices on Kearns Boulevard. You can go and listen to the Park City School District board meeting. Thanks a lot, Amber, for joining us.
Carolyn, I appreciate you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye now. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Carolyn Murray, and this morning for Leslie Thatcher. Next up here in the studio, I have Ben Agnew. He's a Park City High School junior, and I think you play on a sports team. Welcome, Ben. Tell us what team you're on. And
yeah, so I'm part of the baseball team at the high school.
Okay, great. And my understanding is the sports teams have come up with a service project, and you've sort of spearheaded this one pretty amazing effort that's coming up this weekend. And why don't you tell our listeners about the project and what inspired you to embark on it?
Yeah, so we have a group of high school student athletes at the high school called Especially for Athletes, and we were challenged by the founder of Especially for Athletes. His name is Dustin Smith. We were challenged to create a service project as a group of athletes at the high school. And we kind of discussed some things to do, and we didn't have any huge ideas right away. But I was always thinking about a smaller project that I did with my family last year, which was delivering meals to families in Park City during the holiday season that didn't have the opportunity to have a holiday meal. And so I talked to the athletic director at the high school, Jamie Sheets, and also Dustin Smith, the Especially for Athletes founder. And I came up with this project in hopes to make it a little bigger than last year and hopefully make a bigger difference in the community this year.
So it's not just a little bigger. It sounds to me like it's maybe tenfold bigger. tell us what you're planning to do this weekend.
Yeah, so hopefully this weekend we'll be able to deliver around 1,000 meals. That's dependent on how much we raise in donations, but hopefully we'll get around that number.
So how is this all going to work logistically? Will people be preparing meals? Will you be doing it at the school cafeteria? How does it all play out?
Yeah, so we've worked with the Fresh Market and Jeremy Ranch to get all the food, and then we're going to take all the food in the morning and bring it to the high school, where we'll assemble it into bags, and then we'll then deliver it to the families that are in need. And yeah, so we have about 150 volunteers right now to help us assemble the meals. Most of those are students and their families. And then we also have some teachers at the school and some of the administration as well. And those students will just help us assemble the meals in the morning. And then some of them are also signed up to help us deliver.
Is there any cooking involved?
There isn't any cooking involved. It's just putting the food into bags, and then we'll deliver it like that.
So it really stuns me to think that there are 1,000 families that are in need of food assistance mm-hmm. in our town. How have you found these families?
We've worked with the Christian Center and the school to get the families that that really need the food. So the school has a list of kids that don't have the means to always provide for themselves. And so they have programs at the school to help with food, obviously. And also the Christian Center has many programs to provide food. So we've kind of worked with both the school and the Christian Center to try to get the food to as many people as possible.
Okay, and will the 150 volunteers, will many of those people be delivering as mm-hmm. well as?
Yeah, we have. So I made two separate signups for assembly and then for delivery. and we have 150 for assembly and then about 125 for delivery. So many of the same people that are assembling will also help deliver.
Okay. And so those people could be delivering up to, I don't know, 8 to 10 meals.
Yeah. So we'll, yeah. So once we get a final count of how many people we have, then we'll probably have, yeah, at least five meals per person going out probably.
And it's all happening Saturday?
Yeah, Saturday the 23rd.
What times are you all meeting? And
so at the high school, we'll meet at 10. So if those that are signed up, probably a little bit earlier just to get it all figured out. But we'll start at 10, and then we think it'll take about 2 hours to assemble, maybe a little bit less. So 10 to 12, we'll assemble the meals, and then from 12 to 2, we'll go out and deliver them.
Okay. To your knowledge, has any project quite like this one been done in town here?
I know of a project by the Men for Ed Foundation that they do a Thanksgiving meal delivery, so they do something a little bit similar to this. So we've reached out to them too because they had help from the Christian Center as well.
Mm-hmm. But 1,000 meals.
Yeah. No, I'm not sure if anything like this has really ever happened.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And you said that there have been contributions made from the grocery stores mm-hmm. in town.
Yeah, so we've worked with the grocery store at Fresh Market to get all the food. So they've been great with doing that because it's a lot of food.
Yeah, so are you still raising money for the effort?
Yes, for sure. So okay. Like I said, the amount of meals that we can actually end up doing is dependent on how much money we receive. So on parkcitymeals.com, there's a button that you can find, and it's really easy. You can donate, and each meal is going to cost $35. So, yeah, if you want to donate one meal or two or however many amount, that's definitely okay. Appreciated.
Okay. But you'll take anything.
Yes, for
obviously,
sure.
Obviously, as far as a donation. What else? Anything else that can you participate and be a part of it even if you're not a student athlete?
Yeah. So we have a lot of the student athletes' families and then a lot of students just at school that caught wind of it and then signed up. And yeah, so it kind of started as a student athlete based project, but we were happy when other students and their families started signing up too.
Yeah, fantastic effort. Mm-hmm. Really ambitious.
Yeah, thank you.
good for you. Well, thank you, Ben. This has been great. This is Ben Agnew. He's a junior baseball player mm-hmm. with Park City mm-hmm. High School, and he is working to raise enough money to deliver 1,000 meals to Park City families, and I presume that's throughout the county.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. So, well, good work. Thank you for coming in and letting the community know about your amazing project.
Thank you.
Okay. It looks like we have Tom Kelly on the line. Tom, are you there?
Morning, Carolyn.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks for calling in. So it looks like we had a pretty good weekend for alpine ski racing.
Yeah, pretty good weekend, pretty busy weekend, too, as we head into the holidays. First of all, over in Val d'Isère, France, good news from Lindsay Vonn. She won her 78th career World Cup in Val d'Isère, picking up a Super G win on Saturday. And what was particularly important about that is that it essentially qualifies her for the Olympics. It's not that there was really ever any doubt that Lindsay Vonn would be going to Pyeongchang, but she's more or less clinched that, picked up a World Cup win in the process. And given that she had a little bit of a sore knee from an incident she had at Samaritz the weekend before, she decided to take the next day off. That'll give her a break over the holidays. I think we'll see her back in action right after the first of the year, but a good race for her. And then meanwhile, over in Italy, we had the traditional Val Gardena and Alta Badia weekend. In the downhill, Stephen Nyman making his return to action, not up on the podium as he has been three times there, as a winner three times in Val Gardena, the downhill. But Jared Goldberg from Salt Lake City finishing ninth, his best career finish, and it gets him a result that will most likely land him on the Olympic team. And then on Sunday, good news for Ted Ligety of Park City. He was fifth in his second giant slalom back from injury in Alta Badia, Italy. Now, fifth is not really where Ted wants to be, but you could see that his skiing is now getting back to the level that he needs to be competitive. And his second run was magnificent. So I think we're going to see more things from Ted. He'll be back in action throughout the entire season leading up to the Olympics, and some really big giant slaloms coming up for him in January. All eyes this next couple days will be on Courchevel, France. Michaela Schifrin back in action with a giant slalom and a slalom as we head into the holiday break.
Fantastic. And then the Dew Tour, it looks like we've got some things happening.
Now, the Dew Tour over in Breckenridge, you know, one of the big events in free ski and snowboarding this year, taking on added significance as one of the Olympic qualifiers in addition to the Toyota U.S. Grand Prix events. Good news over there, Chloe Kim, just 17 years old, clinches an Olympic spot, top American in the halfpipe, Jamie Anderson, Chris Corning, clinching spots in slope style as well. It's been interesting to watch this. We had some qualifiers for some of the disciplines back last January at Mammoth Mountain. Those have carried over in some cases, and that gave Jamie and Chris their spots. No free skiing Olympic spots clinched yet, and there'll be a break now, and we'll get back in action with the next Dew Tour coming up the second weekend in January at Aspen Snowmass. That'll be the Toyota U.S. Grand Prix, and we'll wrap things up the weekend of the 20th and 21st at Mammoth Mountain, California, with the final and decisive qualifying events for the free ski and the snowboard team.
Okay, let's talk about cross country and some of the finishes there.
Anyway, it's been a really good first period for the USA, particularly on the women's side in cross country. Jesse Diggins and Sadie Bjornsson both running in the top 10 in the overall standings right now, and they've been consistent on that over the past month. A couple of more top 10s for them this past weekend in Toblach, Italy. And also Rosie Brennan from Park City having an outstanding season so far. She's really solidified her position as the number three woman on what is a very, very strong team to begin with. She's in a very good position right now for Olympic selection. That team will get a little holiday break, and they're kind of splintering to different places in Europe. They will not come home, but they will start their tour back up with the Tour de Ski. Three nations, three stops, and seven races here, and that begins on December 30th in Lenzerheide, Switzerland, and moves on then to Oberstdorf, Germany, and wraps up in Val d'Isère, Italy in the early part of January.
Okay, and then finally in freestyle?
You know, it's really interesting. As much as our eyes are focused right now on the 2018 Olympics coming up in Pyeongchang, South Korea this February, we're also looking ahead to 2022 in Beijing, China. We had some of the first test events there. Ashley Caldwell in the aerial event on the podium on Saturday. She was third at Secret Garden, the 2022 aerials venue. And then coming up over the next couple of days, the moguls team in China at Baowu, they'll be demoing their venue for the 2022 Olympics. So long ways away yet, but still getting those venues ready to go.
Wow, we're that far ahead. Let's do 2018 first. How about?
I'd love to get in the book, so
sure.
Should be a good one. And happy holidays to everybody from all of us at U.S. Ski and Snowboard. And we've got lots of action over the holidays, so just stay tuned on Olympic Channel and NBCSN to follow all the action.
Thank you so much for calling in, Tom. Happy holidays to you.
Thanks.
Good morning. Well, I've got Brian Hanton in. He's the director of the Snyderville Basin Recreation District. And you're here to give us, Brian, welcome, first of all. Thank you for coming, and you're here to give us an update on all things Basin Rec.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes.
Some stuff we covered over our board meeting, as well as some stuff we have coming up.
Yeah, so one of the items, the SR 224 crossing, what's happening with that?
With that, there's nothing currently right now, but what we're looking to do is we're teaming up with Summit County as they work on their transportation master plan. And trying to find the best avenues for what needs to go on in that corridor. We know that there's a lot of studies. I think the UDOT has a study going on, and we're just trying to coordinate with them to make sure that we have the best opportunities in using the community's funds wisely, and hoping that we can come up with a solution in that area or wherever that area might be that is best suited for the most of the population.
Yeah, so it's just a single crossing we're looking at probably, but it's a fairly good stretch of roadway.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a busy entry corridor for the community or guests coming in. So we want to make something that would be a appealing to the eye as if it does go, I mean, if we do create something that goes over top or if it's something that's underground. We know that there's a lot of barriers in that area as far as utilities and groundwater and those types of things. So just trying to find the best opportunities that UDOT will come up with through their studies and the county, just so we can create the best thing that we can for the community.
Yeah, and I'm guessing it would coincide with any of the development that's being considered right now at the base of canyons, particularly with those affordable units that are projected to go in there.
Yeah, exactly. Some of those have some connections to our Millennium Trail, but we know some want to cross the highway. So we want to provide that opportunity where it maybe the base of the canyons is a more populated area with all the development going on. And that's what a lot of the studies are looking at. So hopefully we'll have something in the next year, hopefully, and we'll have a plan what we can do with those funds.
Okay. And then it looks like the ice rink was on the discussion.
That's one back in 2014. When the community helped pass the bond, we had funds set aside for the rink, the expansion of the ice rink. We are working with Park City Municipal, obviously, because it's their operations, and Black Rock, the community that's being developed on Browns Canyon Road, are putting in a rink. That's what we've been told. Two indoor rinks and an outdoor rink, and hasn't been developed yet, but it's still in their plans, and they say they're moving forward. So our hope is that we can coordinate with them, and it's only a mile away from the current ice rink. So use some of their open time. I mean, have a public partner public private relationship with them, and do some of the programming out of their facility and help accommodate. So we don't have the 4 to 5 a.m. figure skating groups having to go in the facility where they have a little bit more of a manageable hour to have their activities.
Yeah, is that what we're looking at now, or teams?
Yeah. I mean, figure skaters are probably hockey, and they're in early from 5 a.m. on. And then I know I actually play hockey at night, and we have games that start at 11 p.m. So we're getting out at 1 a.m., 1:30. So it just makes it a little challenging for the next day.
Yeah, I'll say. So two sheets are being looked at for Browns Canyon.
Yeah.
Would that be just at the top of the canyon, basically, where it intersects?
Exactly. It's right about where the kind of overlooks by that stock lumber. It's up a little bit higher on the opposite side of 248. But they are trying to develop a condo ice rink facility for events where weekends would be busy, but during the week they don't. From their business plan, it doesn't look like during the week that they'll have high usage. So that's where we hope to coordinate with them and team up with them to use their open time.
And it's right on the county line, I'm guessing, right?
It's in Wasatch County.
Oh, it's in Wasatch.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Let's move along on the Wellness Fair. That's being organized for January 6th to 11th. And it sounds to me like it's a perfect timing thing for everybody's New Year's resolution to out and play harder and sweat a little bit and breathe hard.
That's right. We're hoping to catch those New Year's resolutions. And it's just January 6th. So from 8 to 11:30 is the time. And so we'll have a bunch of vendors there to talk fitness and help with plans and showing different opportunities that we have at the field house, and we'll have other vendors that will show their what they have to offer the community. And then we also have, during that time from 8 a.m. to 11:30, it's 20% off memberships. So if people didn't take advantage of our November sale, they have another opportunity, or if they want to kick off the New Year's right and haven't been with us before and want to try out our facility, it's a great low-cost opportunity to get involved.
So what is the monthly pass now to the field house? What does that run?
Monthly, it's about $33. So that's just for the facility pass. If you want fitness, there's a little bit more. But other than that, it pretty much includes everything.
Wow.
Our new gym, our swimming pool. We definitely have a lot. I mean, with our expansion we did this past year, there's a lot of opportunities to find ways to fitness and to have fun and improve your quality of life.
That's amazing. So you can get for under $30, basically, with a 20% off, under $30, you have all of the facility available.
Yep.
Unlimited.
Exactly.
And how long can you sign up for a year at the 20% discount?
Yeah, you can get there's month passes, there's year passes, you can do all of that.
Sure.
There is a fitness component to it, so it doesn't include all of it for that under $30, but just know that it's not much more to include all of the fitness classes, and we offer about 70 classes a week. So it's you have your options to choose from if you want to come try us out.
Yeah. Okay, and quickly, let's talk about school vacations and what's being offered by Snyderville Basin.
We're pretty excited. We did this last year and kind of teamed up with the Mark. We offer free entrance to kids that are with a student ID, so 6 to 18, who want to come in and work out and utilize the facility as it should be, use the gymnasium, use the field during open times. They just have to know that there are programmed activities going on as well. So they don't have free rein all the time, but if they stop in and want to come work out and just give them an outlet for the day, if they're done with skiing or they want to take a break from it for a while, they can come and play with us and have some fun things to do.
Okay, so like if they come in to kick a soccer ball around and the field's not scheduled, they can do that with their friends? And
absolutely, yep. Okay. They can come up with their own little game or just kick it against the wall or whatever they want to do. But yeah, we wanted to provide that opportunity to have an outlet from whatever they were doing before.
Okay, and then finally the county council passed the budget,
yep,
which is going to be reflected in a 27% increase in revenues to the county general fund. Are there any particular projects that you have earmarked for that additional funding?
With ours, it's a little different than with what the county's doing with theirs. We have our own operational base that we use. We have some trails that we plan on doing and with some renovations of some parking lots that we currently have. But with ours, we're prepping for some big things to come with Silver Creek Village and 100 Acres Park that we're going to look to develop and planning it out this year. So we're going to ask the community for help with that.
Okay. Well, thanks, Brian, for coming in. That's Brian Hanton.
Thank you.
With the Snyderville Basin Rec District.